Torch the Comic News, episode 173. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host, the magnificent Mike, and a very special guest host, Mr. Travis Gibb. What's going on, guys?
Hey.
Hey.
I mean, this is going to be great. I get to sit back. We're going to let Travis run the show today for most of it, I think, because, man, it's been a hell of a week, but also we got some stuff to talk about with Travis. He's got another Kickstarter out, so welcome back to the show, Travis.
Thank you.
It's always fun when we get people that want to do the show with us because, you know, we get comic fans. I don't know if you're a comic book fan. I haven't heard about that at all, but you probably read a couple here or there. I don't know.
Yeah, big fan of Knights of the Dinner Table, if you ever heard of that. That's a good one. That's one of my favorites. Yeah. Cherry, the little porn book. Yeah, I like that one.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, those are my big, those are the two I've read.
That's it. It's good you found your niche and what you like to read. There's comics out there for everyone. And hey, if Sherry is what you like, then
I've wanted to read my own, but I mean, there's so many words.
Yeah, it's save it for someone else. You know, really quick. So speaking, well, we gotta jump in here. Speaking of other comics, The Bite of Brenna Barlow by our good friend Rob Stanley is on Kickstarter still. You got almost a week left, 6 days. He's reached his goal, and now we're just trying to get stretch goals. So, like we said last week, it's a crazy story with a blind telepathic vampire that can talk to her dachshund. What do you call it, Chris?
Dachshund.
The little wiener dog. It's a great first issue. Chris and I checked it out. It's a lot of fun. The art's fantastic, so please go fund that. The Bite of Brenna Barlow. Check out all the awesome stretch goals he's got, and throw a little money at our good friend Rob Stanley. He's a great guy, and it's a great project. So,
yeah, and the guy, you know, supported us, so support him and vicariously support us.
Yeah.
Plus, it's an awesome book, so check it out.
Right, exactly. Support us through him, something like that.
So speaking of support, I did a Kickstarter a while back, and it was funded. So we were supposed to launch this month. I was supposed to be available for you guys to pick up in case you didn't do the Kickstarter. We've hit some struggles along the way. Listen, first Kickstarter, I learned a lot. Our guest here today has been talking to me a lot about it. And there's certain things on the next one I'll do differently. But long story short, I'm waiting on pages. And I'm not going to announce another release date until I have the book finished and I can give you a confident date of when I'm going to send it out, when you guys can purchase it or check it out and all that. So I apologize for that to all my Kickstarter backers and to all the people out there looking forward to it. But I guess them's the breaks. Next Kickstarter, we got to do it differently and learn from our mistakes. So,
yep. We'll give you a pass this time, Chris.
But I know. You get one. Everybody gets one.
Yeah.
I will tell you, you know, about 70% of all Kickstarters, the first ones are late. It's just when you realize, you know, how long the printer takes, when you realize, you know, how long artists take, and then you think everything's going along smooth, and you're just like, hey, you know, I really need some changes on this page or the colors on this, you know. Comics are not easy. Like, the people who do it, I can't even imagine doing them monthly. That's insane to me. Like, I don't know how Marvel and DC can pull it off. So kudos to you for being honest. And that's the biggest thing, is just being honest and telling people where you're at.
Yeah.
Travis has the experience with Kickstarter. So, you know, talk about books getting funded in a week or so over here. So,
yeah, I was complaining before we got on the air that it's now been a couple of extra days from my normal week. And it's stressful to me. Like, it's not going to fund, even though I'm like $200 away. Like, in my head, I'm just like, there's no way. How could this happen with 19 days?
It'll definitely be a weight lifted off your shoulders when that happens, though.
Yeah.
It's just one thing you got to, a hurdle you got to jump over, right?
I mean, I had my first drop backer today, and it's such an emotional thing because he sent me this deep personal message about, like, all of his personal strife, and I'm like, dude, it's a comic book. I love you, man. Like, it's so good. Like, no issues. He's just like, but I'm gonna get you at the end. If there's a way, I'm gonna figure it out. I'll get you that. I was like, I appreciate you. Like, it's all good.
It'll be available afterwards too. So just don't kill yourself.
Right. Before we jump into the news here, I just got to tell you guys, I watched a movie last night, and it's a movie as a young lad I used to watch almost, I think, like, daily.
Jingle All the Way?
No, although that one's really good. The original Mortal Kombat.
Oh, yes. Now, I've actually been playing the newest Mortal Kombat game, too.
But how do you guys, as far, I know everybody always talks about, like, video game movies being awful, but I don't know. That one has, like, even some of the cheesy stuff that was happening in it, I was just like, this movie's so good. I don't know. I think it still holds up. It gives a lot of crap. I think Rolling Stone rated it, like, one of the worst movies of all time or something, and I don't know. I don't think it is.
Are you sure you're not talking about 2? Because 2 is possibly the worst movie of all
time.
Yeah,
2 is awful. Yeah. We don't talk about 2. 2 never happened. But even, like, I don't know, the intros of how they get all the characters together and, like how do you get Johnny Cage, a movie star, to an island, to right. a world tournament to save the world? So, I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool. The practical effects are pretty awesome, too.
I like it. I remember, like, going into the theater and hearing that song for the first time, like, blowing me away.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Mortal Kombat fan. I mean, this isn't live, so it's a podcast, but... For right. those guys that, as you see, my Mortal Kombat is sitting right there in the background. Yeah. I don't know if you can see it. No, I'm a huge Mortal Kombat fan. I play the new one a lot. I think the first one was fantastic. Christopher Lambert was great casting. Everybody was doing really good. The fact that Kano was Australian blew my mind. Like, I couldn't fathom that. I was like, what are you talking about? He's Australian.
But it worked, right? It worked. I don't know. And that guy was crazy. Yeah, the casting. And then you got, like, Goro, right? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. The practical effects of, like, the arms and, like, the face moving and stuff. Like, that was haunting to me when I first saw him. Like, this guy is terrifying. Yeah. I don't know. It has a special place in my heart.
I may be wrong here, but that's, can't think of the name. The guy who did all the Aliens and Jurassic Park. Stan Winston, is that his name?
Oh, yeah. The practical effects, right? Yeah.
He was the one who did the special effects for Mortal Kombat. Awesome. I think it's Stan Winston. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. That makes me appreciate it that much more. Anyways, I guess we'll just jump into the news now because then we can start talking about your Kickstarter pretty soon. But, this is, I want to say this is ahead of itself, but Amazon did this earlier with the first season, too. Amazon's already renewed Boys for a third season, and I think it makes sense. I mean, they did that with the first one. They already, like, I think before they released the first season, they said there's a second season coming already, so.
Yeah, and they're seeing people get excited about it. I mean, I think they know what they got. It makes sense. I'm super excited for season 2 to come out. I mean, we talked about it in depth about how I just read all the comics this year and love those, but the show is still great to me. Like, it still has its own flavor that still fits in with that comic series, so I'm really happy about this.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they do, how they're going to develop the story for if they're planning on more and more seasons, because the same thing with, like, they did with... like Preacher, I mean, Preacher, they ended already and stuff, but they have to adapt some certain things for TV to make it, like, continuous and make the story flow. They can't just do Herogasm for a whole season, unless they do. I don't know. That'd be awesome. But
no, I can see that being, like, a couple episodes or them, like, hitting on it. I don't know if that would be a whole season, but there's things they could do. I mean, there's also things that aren't going to fit because they changed how... Huey isn't from across the Ireland.
Right.
From New York. So there's things going on there. And I'm also very curious because we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago. There was a pit bull in that trailer. So, like, terror is coming into the story somehow. So
right.
I don't know. I'm just really excited to get this show going come September.
Yeah, me too.
Well, and when I was, I watched the trailer for season two and I was just like, oh yeah, they really didn't kill anybody. Like, you feel like it was boys and they murdered a whole bunch of people, but they really didn't. Like, they only got rid of Invisible Guy. I get his name, his, superhero. But that's it. Like, they just got in a lot of fights and got their ass kicked a lot.
Pretty much. Yeah, you have a good point. Like, besides, you know, Huey's girlfriend dying, which was amazing. And, the Invisible Man, like getting blown up. We really hadn't had that many casualties. I think you got to establish that, you know, Butcher has a dog, and then something happens to it, and then he's going to go on a killing spree. I'm ready for that.
You got to establish Terror for, like, the season three ending to be, like, you know, to have that moment where he dies. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. They haven't announced a whole lot of casting outside of a few, like, key roles. So, I mean, they could still do G-Men. They could still do, you know, the Kidniks and all these other little groups that they spied on or killed or just slaughtered.
Yeah, like the C-class heroes or whatever. They don't really talk that much about those in the first season.
So, we'll see. But, yeah, you're right. They killed, like, one guy, and it was interesting, but
they killed her girlfriend too, didn't they?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly?
Yeah.
No, not Huey's girlfriend. The black guy's girlfriend, the one on drugs, the former superhero. Did they kill her? Or did they just get the information out of her? I don't remember if they killed her.
I thought they just got the information out of her, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
They might have killed her.
Yeah. But as far as the superheroes go, it was like that was the one big one. But you know, the way we ended it,
where they're murdering people all the time.
Yeah,
like, there's tons of differences between the comics. I mean, they're not even, as we know now, they're not working for the CIA, so.
Right.
But, yeah.
And we might see that happen, like, they become an actual entity of the CIA or something like that.
Yeah.
Also, I think part of it is, like, we haven't seen those other heroes because it costs quite a bit of money to make those costumes. And they're like, okay, first season, we probably don't have the budget yet. We don't know how this is going to be received, but now, like, everybody's like, oh my god, this show's amazing.
Yeah.
We might get more and more. Well, finally, the Walking Dead final episode is set to air on October 4th. They also announced at the San Diego Comic-Con at home is there will be 6 additional episodes for season 10, airing early 2020. And finally, season 11 has been delayed until October 2021. So, do you think this was planned? Like, they're supposed to do this as a final episode, Chris? Because I'm not watching the show anymore, but
this is directly related to COVID-19. So they weren't able to finish shooting the final episode. I understand what they're doing here because they expected to have the final episode out and start production of season 11 already. And obviously that has not happened due to the apocalypse happening. So this seems to be kind of a really nice way to get around that. I mean, they plan on early 2021 for the 6 episodes. Would not shock me if that gets delayed further. And then they can just continue production through, but I just want to see that final episode, right?
You need,
like,
it feels
like forever since I've watched that episode that was supposed to be before the final episode.
Right. Yeah, it's been quite a while. And then we have The Walking Dead, A World Beyond, got another trailer from San Diego Comic-Con. And the release date is October 4th. So, in case you didn't have enough Walking Dead in your life,
Never too much Walking Dead.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? Are you still excited for it, or you're like, meh?
I'm still on the edge of, like, I'll check it out, but it doesn't look too appetizing to me, especially on a full plate of shows in our lives. But I'll check it out because this is Walking Dead. The same with the Fear of the Walking Dead. Like, I checked it out, and it wasn't for me. And now I might go back to it late, you know, now that we're 6 seasons in. But I also did realize that this is actually like a 2-season thing, that they're going to do 2 seasons and they're done. So that's kind of nice, too. That's not like an ongoing thing.
Right.
But, Travis, do you watch any Walking Dead anymore? Or?
So I am a season behind. I caught up on Netflix recently just at the beginning of COVID. I was like, all right, I need something new to watch. I guess I'm stuck at home. So I watched... You know, the beginning of the Whispers stuff, but I didn't see the end of it. But it, you know, it loses its luster to me when the comic book's not there. Like it really does. Like when the comic book was there, it was really easy for me to do the two. But between the without the comic, it's you know, just whatever. And then no Rick. Like it's been tough without Rick. And they're just like, there's a movie coming. Like, but you got to film it. You can't just say there's a movie. You actually have to film it. Like, it's not really a thing. But now Michonne's on it. No, Michonne just got kicked off the show. You added her to it. Well, she left. But, like, come on. you can't just add everyone. To- right. It's got to be true at some point. And then Maggie's like, your show didn't work? All right, come hang out with zombies again. Like, come on.
Yeah. And Lincoln's been on, like, online talking to people saying that he regrets the way he, quote-unquote, left the show. So, I think they realize they made a mistake there. My big thing is going to be when they get to where the comic ended, that's when I'm going to be kind of weird about the whole show, because then you're just making, I mean, we're all making stuff up, but then you're not following that formula anymore. You're going on with your own stories, and that could either be really cool or that could be a complete disaster. We don't know. I do kind of agree with you that without the book villain round, it's been weird, but I'm still really enjoying that show. I mean, it's got its ups and downs like anything else, but
yeah.
I still depend on it every year, and not having it this year is going to be really weird, with the rest of this year.
As a Doctor Who fan, I've had that my whole life, so don't worry about it. It gets better. Sting hurts less over time.
Yeah. But yeah, you being a Doctor Who fan, it's like once you get in a season where you don't like the Doctor, you're like, oh, well, this sucks, right?
Right. You just got to wait it out 4 or 5 years and then you're fine. And then if they skip a year, which they do sometimes, like it's ridiculous. British shouldn't be allowed to make TV. They should just give it to America and like let us go for it. But The Walking Dead, the negative of The Walking Dead is none of the subplots that they come up with do they ever resolve.
No.
Right? They That's only true, resolve yeah. Kirkman's plot, subplots, and that pisses me off about the show. Like, the Savagers, what happened to them? The Saviors. That wolf little group that was doing their things, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No idea. They disappeared.
Yeah, right.
They were there for, like, 2 episodes, and then it's like, okay, they're gone now. We got Negan now.
Right.
Yeah, insert Negan. Now we can revolve the story around him. No big deal. Yeah, I kind of stopped watching when they when all that stuff happened with who was Rick's son? I can't even think of his name now.
Carl.
Where they randomly like kill him off, and all the stuff happened between him and like the writers, and how he got the actor himself was saying, "Oh, I got shorted on how much airtime and blah 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 he was supposed to have," and that was like it just seemed like a weird death to be placed in the show, and I was like, "Yeah, that's kind of where I backed out." I was like, "This is getting," it lost its weight to me almost. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that death wasn't as strong as it was. They didn't kill him in the book, but like that scene, the way everything develops in the book is so much stronger than than that. Yeah. You know, I do like I can't think of the girl's name, right? Clementine.
Yes, from the game.
Yeah, not Clementine. His daughter.
Oh,
shit. Is the baby grown up now?
Yeah,
she grew up. I have liked her though, because she's super dope, and I think it fits better with the Negan like relationship than Carl ever did.
Oh, okay.
Well, the Carl thing's tough because the comic was always about Carl. And, I mean, Carl and Rick, but it was really, as we learned with that final issue, like, it was Carl's story of Carl growing up in the apocalypse. And when you bring that to TV, you have this kid who was really good for a while, and he's kind of grown up. Like, he's not that little kid anymore.
Right.
So, it's, the death was weird, but I almost like how they transition, like Travis is saying, to the daughter, because she gets to be Carl, but like with a different perspective of all this, because she was actually born during all of this. So
Judith.
Yeah. And just the certain swaps they've made with like Michonne being her quote unquote mother, and other things. So it's Yeah, I've always treated that show as an Earth 2 show. So,
right. Well, and those kids were cool, the stealing kids.
Yeah.
That they would go. So you didn't see it, you know, because you left when Carl died. But these little kids, what they would do is they would befriend families and like get adopted, and then they would rob them and leave. Oh,
yeah. I mean, that's a tactic,
right?
Yeah, like I think Carl was too old to be pulling stuff like that. Someone adopt me. It's like, you're a grown man. Like, fend for yourself. So let's talk about Marvel's Hellstrom. So Hulu's getting an exclusive show. They dropped the first trailer. We got a release date, October 16th. Chris, you're definitely a big Marvel fan compared to me. So what do you think? Is this a show you're going to throw on your slate here or what?
This is going to be a Mike show.
Oh.
This is very horror-centric looking. Okay. Almost, you know, it's about the son of Satan, basically. So it's right. A lot of satanic rituals, a lot of sight horror and just like demonic horror and stuff like that. So I will check it out because it does say Marvel in the title. But I can see you loving the show more than I will, actually.
I am definitely checking it out.
So you're saying that you want to give Hulu a second chance after they destroyed Cloak and Dagger? Like, you're like, let's do that.
I'm going to be real with you. I think I watched like one episode of Cloak and Dagger, and I was never a big Cloak and Dagger guy. So
it's unwatchable. I know.
It's unwatchable. Well, that's
it's unwatchable. It's so bad. Runaways was good, but like Cloak and Dagger, not so much. And even Runaways was tough. Like getting towards later season, you're like, I live my Dawson's Creek days. I don't want to go through it again.
I
watched that first season of Runaways and really liked it, and I never got around to continuing it. And I don't know why.
The shows they have on Hulu, they have Legion is on Hulu now because that was on FX. That show I need to finish, and that was one I really enjoyed. I thought that was a cool twist on like that was more of like a show that was more I don't know, out there, like more like in his mind, right? So that that was kind of trippy. The Cloak and Dagger just didn't seem like something that was like, I get it, you know. I've seen this type of show before. Plus, I get all the drama from CW that I need. You know, it's like I don't need any more of that Dawson's Creek stuff in my life. I don't know. It's hard for me to like that stuff.
I mean, you get them in The Flash and you get them in Supergirl. Like, do you really need an extra? Like, I stopped all those shows. I love them all. They're great. Right.
Yeah.
Just they was 12, and I don't have time to watch 12 hours of TV.
Oh, no, I agree. Yeah, for sure.
For me, those shows ended when Crisis on Infinite Earths happened. That was the ending of those shows. They don't exist anymore as far as I'm concerned.
Chris said it. I mean, I don't think I've watched any episodes of any of the CW shows since the Crisis ending, just because like the ends with all of them sitting around, you know, they have a Hall of Justice, they're sitting around the table and it's like, bam, roll credits. Right. I don't need to see anything else. I mean, I've already seen Flash travel through time like 12 times in one episode, you know, like, don't travel through time, Flash. He's like, I'm going to do it. Don't do it. Oh, he did it. Like, that's every season, you know, like, and I love the shows. I think the characters and the actors are great, but it was like, it just becomes too much to keep up with.
Right.
You know, I know Chris checked out Stargirl and said the first episode was pretty good. So I still have yet to check that out.
Everyone who's watched that says like it feels like a Geoff Johns comic book, like it has the Geoff Johns feel and its flavor. And you know, in Titans, when I watched Titans this first season, if you guys watched that,
yep, I did.
A couple episodes that were written by Geoff Johns, and you felt it like at the end of the episode, you're like, oh, I really like that. You're like, oh, that's Geoff Johns. That's why I miss him.
Yeah,
remember when you strike comics? Those were good times.
Remember when he released a comic on time and did a full series? Yeah, that was great.
So good.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Travis. Three Jokers is coming, only like 6 years late, but it's coming.
Yeah, well.
Well, I mean, issue one is coming.
Yeah.
And what a way to ruin let's stick there for a minute. What a way to ruin Joker Wars. So you guys really like this Joker War? The next big Joker thing is here. Screw you guys. Let me
James Tinian's like, oh man, really, dude? Come on. Like I had this great story for Joker, and you're just, nobody cares. Nobody cares about this. They want to hear, like, they're going to read the Geoff Johns book.
It's ridiculous.
Well, before we get into all that comic news, though, let's talk about your Kickstarter. That's why you're here, right, Travis?
I actually love talking about comic news, so I'm good if we skip it.
That's all right, we'll skip it right now. We gotta talk a little bit about it here. So give us the lowdown. What is Voodoo Nation?
So Voodoo Nations is a story about two missionaries. They travel to Brazil, and they decide to, you know, be heroes. They're solving a real world flood that hit it, killed like 200 people. They're doing the whole Christian thing, and they decide to do it on a voodoo priest territory, and the voodoo priest gets very angry and turns their world upside down, but not just messes with them physically, but actually like messes with their minds, fucks with them, shows them that voodoo is not only very real, but you shouldn't be coming into our territory, coming into our world. They have to travel all around the world to try to escape this guy. They go to New Orleans, they go to Brazil, and their life turns upside down because they decided to get involved in stuff that they didn't know anything about. So that's what it's in. It's a 4-issue miniseries. Kind of came about because of COVID. I had the story in my head for a while, and an artist said, man, COVID hit, and I'm stuck at home. I can't work. You know, I need something to draw. And I was like, well, here you go, good sir. And that's what happened. And we're launching. We're almost funded right now. We're about $200 short. That's where we're at. It's a really cool book, written by me, written by Luke Stone. Both of us have a great track record. He has a book called Hybrids that was a 5-issue miniseries. As you guys know from me from Broke Down, you know, I'm finishing that at the end of this year. So
yep.
lots of good stuff.
Speaking with the book, I mean, the art team you got on with this is phenomenal. Like the pages you see on the Kickstarter are just amazing. It looks great. You also recently released Parallels, which was a collection of your old anthology stories as well, which I haven't got around to reading because I was just reading Broke Down. And then you said Broke Down is going to be issue 4 is coming later this year as well.
Yeah. The plan is to finish it by December. We're about halfway done now, and then to get it all out by December. You probably won't get it till 2021, but the Kickstarter will be live in 2020.
And all those books are available at a tier on the Kickstarter as well, correct?
Correct, yeah. There's a get-to-know Travis Gibb collection. You can come be intimate with me. Nice. All the stuff I write, we can just be intimate together and just read these wonderful things. Together, you know, there's I'll read them to you if you want. We'll start with a chat.
take my money. I'm looking for like the pillow talk pledge. Where's that one?
but yeah, you can get a digital or physical. You can get all my stuff. If you want to catch up on my writing, you can absolutely do that. Voodoo Nations, we also hope to have another issue done by the end of the year and launch it in like February of next year. So the whole thing's going to be launching up. Luke Stone's way faster than Felix for art. I mean, this book is completely drawn. If you scroll to the bottom of the Kickstarter, you can actually see like they don't want to spoil anything. So the screenshots, but you can see the whole issue is drawn out, you know, because I don't go to Kickstarter unless it's fully drawn.
Oh, okay.
If somebody wanted to just like check you out and maybe get Broke Down number 1 or Parallels or something just to see, is there a way that they can get those books outside of the Kickstarter?
Yeah. You can go to Broke Down in 4 Dead Bodies. You can get it there. You can also get it on Comixology or SpinWiz, both of those if you want the digital side. But yeah, you can go to Broke Down in 4 Dead Bodies and you can get it.
Cool. So yeah, everybody, yeah, check those out. Voodoo Nation looks great. So. We talked about last week. I read all of Broke Down. I read 1 and 2 again, and then 3. So those are good books. Check those out.
Wait, you talked about there's a live broadcast where people talk about me, and I didn't know about it. My ego, I need to know these things.
You know, it happens. Yeah.
What happened? Was it bad?
It's best we don't.
Am I here to be talked about, like, of how horrible
the story? Well, we can't tell you to your face. That's
yeah, after the show, you can go listen to it, and then you can find out. Yeah. For now, we're friends, Travis. It's fine. Yeah.
There's a thing called story structure. He knows nothing about it.
Yeah, I didn't say it. speaking of story structure, though, before we jump off of Voodoo Nations, this is definitely a change of direction, comparing it to Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies. So is this, would you say this is probably the darkest or more, I guess, more horror style that you've written out of all your books? Or
Yeah, I write a little bit of horror in some the Parallels anthologies, but crime is my where I thrive. But I really wanted to tell a horror story, and I really wanted to attack Christianity. Mm. I really did. And this is I'm actually a Christian, but I really wanted to. It's bullshit, right? We go into these foreign countries. We go, we take over. I am a web designer, and I have several nonprofits, and they celebrate Thanksgiving. Why are they in Haiti celebrating American Thanksgiving, right? Why do they get the 4th of July off? Like, we Americanize it, and this is me going, like, it's bullshit. That's not what it's about. Right. Like, and you guys just don't understand. I mean, just look at our political spectrum, right? Like, to... If you are a Christian, how Trump of a Christian are you? Like, you can't.
Right. Like,
and I'm not even saying it's bad or good. I'm just saying, like, that's just the way it is. So I really wanted to just bash into that and show, like, hey, if we keep going down this path, bad shit's going to happen. I really wanted to create a bigger universe. I wanted a big bad guy. So every issue introduced a new voodoo priest. So some are good, some are bad. So I wanted to have this cast of characters that are superhero-esque. So this is kind of my cross between superheroes and horror. There's no superhero per se, but there's lots of super villains all around. So I really wanted to share that. It's a little different. You're not going to see my colorful language that I love to use in Broke Down, which is, it's a shame because people love that, but you're going to see some really unique and dark storytelling. I do some dark stuff. If you follow, know the basic tenets of Christianity, like, I really do some blasphemous stuff in Voodoo Nations. So it's a lot of fun to do. And the artist is a pastor, which is just hilarious to me. Like, actual pastor of a church actively going right now.
Oh, wow.
40-something congregation. The editor has a master's in theology because I wanted to make sure not only am I going to talk about and really, like, attack Christianity, it also needs to be Christian sound. Like, my scripture needs to be set. Yeah, so it's interesting using those texts. But what I want to say is for people who are scared about that, because if you read Broke Down, you're like, this guy shouldn't be writing something like that. It's like The Exorcist, right? The Exorcist is based on Christianity, but you don't think of it as a Christian film, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So you say you do some dark things. Are there ever moments when you're writing that stuff where you're just like, I'm ashamed of myself and I need to, like, stop this? Because I had a moment like that on issue 3 of Battle Monsters where I was just like, I can't believe I just did that.
I should, but no. I have a lot of anger towards the way things are done in the field, and I use this to really attack those subjects and address them within a context of a story. I mean, the true story is about, my parents died the last couple of years, and it's really dealing with death in the series, running from it, dealing with it. There's that big death thing that goes through this, and this is me processing it from various levels and things that I actually did. I went to New Orleans when my mom died. The first thing I did, I was like, and this is crazy, so I went to New Orleans to celebrate her life and to not think about it. My mom was in AA. She was a recovering alcoholic. Like, these things do not line up. Right? Like, I'm not honoring my mom at all.
Time to go to Bourbon Street.
Right. These things don't light up, but they lined up perfectly in my head because that's what you do when you're in grief. Like, it's fine. Yeah. Like, I got my brother down. I'm like, not only me, I'm going to get my whole family involved.
You're all coming down with me. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, it doesn't make any sense. We do crazy things when we're in grief, and I really wanted to tackle that, tackle religion a little bit, and make it fun. So that's the goal of it. It's going to be dark. It's going to be twisted. We're going to go to some deep, dark places. It's a world-treading adventure. This is the most movie-like. I know that Broke Down feels kind of like a movie, like a Quentin Tarantino movie. This is like a national treasure, but with voodoo.
That's all I need.
Yeah, that's all I needed.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage is what sold you. I get you.
for Nick Cage.
So before we move on to the comic book news, where can people find you and where can people find the Kickstarter?
So the Kickstarter is, we're live, we're at Voodoo Nations. I know that this airs late, so you're going to miss out on some opportunities, but check out on August 1st. We've got a new, we've got some other cool pledges coming. So just so you know, every week of this campaign, we add something new and dynamic. So it's very, very different than a broke down. I kind of throw all my stuff out there. This one, we're kind of surprising people as we go. So go to Kickstarter, go to Voodoo Nations. You can go to voodoonations.com and find it. For Broke Down, you go to brokedownandfourdeadbodies.com. I'm Travis Gibbs. You can find me on Facebook. And on Twitter, you can go Jester Lou. Or on Instagram, you can go Jester Lou. And do you guys still have that digital copy I gave you guys around Christmas? Did I give you guys one?
Yep.
You guys are more than welcome to put that link out when we do this live. You know, go ahead and show them the first issue of Broke Down. I think they'd enjoy it.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. We got permission. Let's do it. All right.
All right. So then you could see the horrible thing that was reviewed last week when he bashed me for hours.
Well, that was issue 3. Issue 1's a little better.
I thought issue 3 was the best one.
Not about how you start. It's how you finish, you know. It's but yeah, everybody check it out. Go to the Kickstarter. We'll have the link up in the show notes. So check it out. And I guess we'll just talk comic news, huh? Is everybody ready for that? All right. Comic news. Originally announced in 2019 by Dark Horse Comics, Neil Gaiman's prose novel, The Norse Mythology, will be adapted into comics this year, October of this year, to be precise. So that's pretty cool. I've always been interested in Norse mythology. I don't necessarily read novels, so I would love to see a comic adaptation of this.
I bought and read Norse Mythology when it came out in prose. It's really good, and I'm excited to see it adapted to the comics. Like you, love like any kind of mythology I'm really into. We constantly talk about how I enjoy storytelling through Christian mythology. I mean, it's no different with Norse or Greek or anything like that. Like, I just love mythology and how it builds around, you know, moral structures and how societies use that to do different things, whether it's through controlling people or trying to influence people or whatever. And I'm down with these crazy stories with Norse gods, Loki, Thor, so on and so forth. So bring it on.
Awesome.
So I have my hesitations. So I love Neil Gaiman. I love that book. I thought Norse mythology was really good, but I really felt that the American Gods adaption wasn't that great. And it's done by, that was also done by Dark Horse, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So I have a little hesitation on it. The positive of the Norse mythology is literally you could do, you know, a couple comics, you know, a story. Because the stories are only about 5 to 10 pages each.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be some cool stuff there, but I'm a little nervous.
And speaking of Neil Gaiman, I just bought the audiobook for Sandman released this week. So that was pretty cool. I bought it just to see how an audiobook of a graphic novel works. And I wonder if it's just because of the way he writes, if it's going to work that way. Or it's only about 10 hours long as far as novels go. Like, I think for reference, I think Dune is like 30 hours long for an audiobook. So I'm interested to check it out. I got to finish up Dune, but then I'm going to listen to that. And I'm curious to how the way he writes. And like you said, you didn't like how American Gods was adapted. Can everything really fit, you know, every medium for him? And I'm not so sure that's true with him, just the way he writes. I don't know.
I mean, I've heard good reviews thus far of the Audible Sandman. Yeah. Do you know how far it goes in? Is it just the first trade or what is it?
I'm not sure. If it's 10 hours, I gotta think it's more than one trade. So I don't know if they split it into two halves because of what, I haven't looked that far into it. It's just Neil Gaiman's The Sandman. So that's all, that's its title right now. But
yeah, I know people have been loving that. I know he did that show for Amazon based on one of his novels that people love.
Yep.
Good Omens, yes. American Gods did kind of, I know they did a TV show about it that kind of fell away, and then the comic book no one really talked about that much. So I don't know. I'm with you, and that I heard bad things about American Gods, but I think I have more faith in Norse mythology to do something, especially since it doesn't have to have, like you said, it's, you know, shorter stories that can be told in like snippets, like 2, 3, 4 issues, and then move on.
But what's so great about Neil Gaiman, though? Like, that guy knows how to sell his stuff. Like, everything he's ever made has been turned into a comic.
Yeah. he knows someone. I don't know. Well,
there's great stories about him from the early 90s when he was doing Sandman, and people saying, like, because if you go back to that time, from what I'm told, because I was still a young Chris, his books didn't really come out on time back then, especially Sandman. And there's stories of other creators saying, like, what are you doing? Like, get the book out. And him going like, no, this is going to be like, I'm putting my time into this. I'm putting my work into this because 10, 20, 30 years from now, people are still going to be buying this book. Like, I'm really confident in this book. And you know what? He was right. Like 10, 20, 30 years from then, we're still buying and talking about that book. So I think he's just, not only is he great at selling his work and selling himself, but I think he's a grinder, and he's just a guy that knows that maybe he doesn't put out 100 books a year, or, you know, he's not Jeff Lemire who puts out 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 at a time, but he'll put out one really good one and it'll last. So I think that's a big part of his success as well.
Right.
Yeah, you got a good point. Plus, I mean,
writing, not to take away from Jeff Lemire, I love Jeff Lemire.
Right. Yeah. And I think the fact that Sandman is like one of those comic book shop holy grails of, there's always those like top five you get recommended, and it's like, you know, Kingdom Come, Sandman, Dark Knight Returns, stuff like that. The Boys, Why the Last Man. There's like that, I don't know, top 10 that people are like, whether you like the comic or not, this is just good writing, and it's good structure, and this is how stories should be told.
So I should stop recommending everybody The Crossed?
I mean, if you're a sick individual that you love, I wouldn't start with that Garth Ennis work, but why not?
Crossed is awesome. Everybody, you should read it and then have nightmares for the rest of your life.
It's funny
awesome.
You brought up Crossed, because when you guys were talking about when you wrote something that you regretted or felt like dirty about doing, I was just thinking about Garth Ennis writing Crossed and how he just doesn't give a shit.
That was the first book that I've ever dropped, because I was like, I became a Christian. And that was the first book I was like, there is no redeeming value to this book. Like, there's extra story. There's no like deep family values that I need to get, like Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like, it's really just, what's the next shock value that I can give you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How crazy. I think it was Crossed like 1,000 or something, but Alan Moore jumps on the book and starts writing it. And I want to be in Alan Moore's head when he's writing that book, because he does some things I'm just like, not only is he doing Alan Moore things, but then he's doing Alan Moore things with Crossed.
It's ridiculous.
And that was one of the books that was like, I remember walking up to in the comic shop and be like, am I going to like this? Because I like Walking Dead. They're like, nope. And I flipped through it and I'm like, oh, it doesn't seem like there's much story here. It's just like,
you have to be a soulless individual like Chris.
Yeah.
But think of the people who've written it. You know, Ennis has written it. Dave LePan, you know, from Stray Bullets. Who else? Hold on. Give me a second. David Hines has read it, written some stuff. Karen Gillian wrote some stuff. Like, all these mega superstars have written this god-awful book that nobody should read.
And it's like, I don't know, it's almost like a venting for them, maybe. Like, how crazy can we go? How blasphemous can we get, almost? And here you go. Here's the book. I just remember, like, it was almost like the shock factor of, like, okay, this book is on the shelf, and this is, well, hey, I mean, you know, freedom of speech. You know, like, freedom of all that stuff is, like, this could be put out there. And I'm just surprised it wasn't wrapped in, like, a caution label, you know?
Well, it's funny you say that. It's funny you say that, because we have bookshelves out in our main room at our house, and mine has mostly comics, and then there's a shelf for all the prose I read. And my cross trades are not on there. Like, they're tucked away in my closet like porn magazines. Like, I don't want the kids to get their hands on it.
Like, there's a false wall.
Did you guys read Murder Hobo from Scout?
No.
So I'm a huge Dungeons & Dragons fan, and that is basically like the cross of like Dungeons & Dragons, and I was not prepared for that. I was like, I don't know what to do with this book. Like, and I'm trying to put myself, all right, so if I was 16, would I enjoy this? I was like, no. I still would. And I love the guy. He does Electric Black and a few other things. I'm just like, I just don't understand.
Yeah, Electric Black was good. I forgot how we got to cross from there, but we'll just jump into DC news here. DC showed its first teaser for their upcoming crossover or event or whatever it's going to be. It's called Endless Winter. They have very few details, but it's a Justice League-centric story called Endless Winter.
Okay.
Are we ready for another event? I don't know. Who knows?
Marvel's doing Dark Ages, so they've got to do Endless Winter.
Listen, I know you're a noob to this event every 2 weeks thing, but I've been reading Marvel my whole life, so.
Marvel's got swords. They got Empire. They just wrapped up another X-Men event.
I'm getting through Empire. I'm jumping right into swords, and then I got King in Black, and then who knows what's after that? But it'll be something.
Yeah, I mean,
That's the only thing COVID's done for us. When COVID would come back, I was like, Marvel, do you really want to start out with Empire? Like, nobody's excited about it. I'm going to read it, but, like, do we really? Like, I don't feel that strong.
You can take a break. I don't know. that's interesting. Endless Winter, I'm just curious what it's in reference to, but...
I'm glad it's just not, like, the Endless Winter crisis. I love a good crisis as much as anybody, but
now
you need to take breaks in between them.
So this is what I'm pitching for Endless Winter. The only way that I'll get excited for a very secretive event book, okay? Endless Winter. I'm just thinking right here, cold. I think like Cold War, right? So flashback to. I mean, we already have an event book going on. I guess the Death Metal. Death Metal is technically an event book. But recently in that event book, we see that the Red Sun Earth is being destroyed. So what if this is like a spinoff of like Red Sun Earth with crossover with the Justice League and we get like, I don't know, Russian Superman versus Red? That's the book I would read. Like, call that Endless Winter. Give me some weird crossover with those two Earths. I would really love that. Other than that, I can't really think of anything that I'd like to read.
I think Captain Cold just takes some venom and goes nuts. Like that's.
I'd probably read that too, honestly.
this is the one and only Mr. Freeze one that we've been waiting for and everybody's been asking for.
Yes. I've definitely been asking for that. So
it's Arnold version too, just so you guys know.
Oh my god. Now I have to read it. Everybody freeze. Or
everybody is chill out.
Oh my god, I love that movie just because the part where they fall over and they click their shoes together and ice skates pop out.
Yes,
probably one of my favorite cinematic moments of anything. I've never seen anything so like campy and ridiculous. It's like, what if they accidentally click their shoes together and like ice skates pop out and it's like, oh shit, I stepped on someone's toes. Like,
hey, Joel Schumacher's dead. You can't be mocking him anymore.
Oh, no, I'm celebrating him. I loved it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just awesome. All right, so now we're going to get into the whole the drama, all right? So,
well, don't forget about Tom Taylor.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Tom Taylor had a tweet that was dramatic. Okay. Tom Taylor sent out a cryptic tweet teasing the return of Injustice. He tweeted an image of an eye in the Injustice font with a quote. That it could have been different from Batman and the Injustice series. So, pretty awesome stuff. His Injustice series is awesome. And Tom Taylor could write a book. So that's actually really exciting.
Injustice versus Deceased.
You think so?
That's my prediction.
That would be pretty
cool. It would make sense. Deceased seems to be doing well. In fact, DC seems to be doing well as long as they have alternate realities. I think that's a problem, but... You know, that's not for me to judge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
I love Deceased. I think that the most recent issue of the new series was like the best it's been. And I was on the ride. Like, we joke around about Injustice at our comic shop. That's the 4-issue miniseries that could, because it went on for what, like 4 years.
Yeah.
And I'm down for him to come back to it, because when he dropped off it in Injustice 2, and I forget who took over, but it kind of just lost something. Because it was Tom Taylor's world. I mean, I know it was DC characters and all that, but that was Tom Taylor's world. So I would love for him to come back. It also wouldn't surprise me, like, if it was that they're going to do Injustice 3, because you know that game's coming around the corner. So
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have loved to see them add Mortal Kombat into that series. You know, make DC owns Mortal Kombat, so yeah. I don't understand why they don't add them to stuff. I think they fit perfectly in the DC mythos. You even reset the whole universe, so you could have had them in from the ground start. But
right,
well, yeah, and it was, if you remember, I think it was Injustice 2. It might have been the first one, but they did a DLC characters that was Scorpion, Sub-Zero, done by Jim Lee. And it was just so good. Like, yeah, there's definitely a way they could have either done that as an alternate reality for DC, or even put that as part of Injustice. Like, yeah, that'd be cool.
I wish, you know. but I think anything Tom Taylor puts out, I mean, his run on Suicide Squad right now is, I'm loving it. That he's doing a great job with that. So
yeah, Tom Taylor's gonna be a superstar soon.
Oh yeah, yep. So Dynamite Comics is under fire after posting an Indiegogo for a variant cover featuring Vampirella, Red Sonja, and creator Cecil Jones' character Cash Grab. Cecil is known to be a member of the online group Comicsgate. Creators Mark Russell, Gail Simone, and others have said that they'll no longer work with Dynamite over their support of Comicsgate. All right, so Dynamite just trying to stir things up over here.
Yeah, and then pulling their panels from San Diego Comic-Con at home was like, because for me, like, the thing that initially hit me was like, I don't read a ton of Dynamite, but I do read James Bond. And yeah,
you love your James Bond books.
Yeah, so, and then, you know, a creator we talk about constantly, Mark Russell, that we both love, like, things he does, speaking out. I think I said in the shop that if this is the company Dynamite wants to be, they have every right to be, but it's dumb to do it. Like, they're slowly going to move to be nothing if this is what they're going to get, because nobody's going to want to work with them, at least nobody of note. And it's not like they have these characters that are so beloved that they can continue to create comics based on them. Like, they're always miniseries or stuff like that. Exceptions being like Red Sonja and a few others, but
they still own the rights to The Boys, or no? Are they?
Yeah, and that was another thing. Ennis has been very quiet about this whole thing, which was kind of weird, at least that I have seen. And same with the artist for The Boys, Derek Robertson.
Yeah, Robertson, yep. Interesting.
I'm very weird about this whole thing. I mean, it looks like 007 is going to leave Dynamite, so it might not really hurt me all that much personally, but I just don't understand why you get in bed with these people knowing exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. Outside of the fact that they, you know, they're fucking terrible people and Ethan Man Scriver is a terrible person, but I don't understand business-wise why you get in bed with them, because we all know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it may help Vampirella, but it's going to destroy everything else. So, and though Vampirella is their bread and butter, I totally get that. They have a lot of other stuff that stuff. And I don't know if you saw the screenshot of the interior of that book. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's an attack on everything that is social justice. Like, and I get it. It's supposed to be tongue in cheek, but like, the character doesn't, like, he's like, you're a superhero. Yeah. Then a black guy robs somebody. Hey, why didn't you stop him? Well, I don't. That guy's already been oppressed his whole life. I don't want to get into it. Come on, dude. Yeah, that's. I'll see if I can get that one page for you guys for the.
Oh no, the thing.
It's pretty bad.
I didn't see that.
Yeah,
it's I will say
I grabbed it. I have it somewhere. I just gotta find it.
Oh my god!
I will say I've been reading The Boys, Dear Becky, and. Issue one, it wasn't really an attack on like the SJW movement, but he definitely like throws some shade that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's some weird things going on at Dynamite. I will not be surprised if they're not around in a year or two.
But like you said, as a business decision, I mean, you have people like Mark Russell and Gail Simone, and Gail Simone has a huge following of like, you know, you got them against you, so now you're already like losing a ton of fans.
Like, and you know who these people are. Like, we know who these people are.
Yeah, so. Right.
I just think it's done, and it's done at a bad time, right? So Comicsgate is had a big win. Even Vince Skyrim's, you know, $1 million Kickstarter, you know, is a big thing. I mean, he claims it's the biggest Kickstarter of all time, the biggest crowdfunding of all time for comics, which it's not, just so you know.
Yeah.
It's Kickstarter still owns that. It is Order of the Stick. Which I would argue is actually more impressive because Order of the Stick doesn't have a DC credit connected to them. Order of the Stick is the highest. It's at $3 million is what.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So Ethan and Skyrim may beat it because they have that on demand that where they can keep getting, you know, pledges throughout. So they may beat it at time. But as of right now, he is not. And he is falsely claiming that he is the highest crowdfunder of comics of all time. So, but I think that that big win gives a lot of ego to them, which is not deserved.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I forget who the CEO of Dynamite is, but I know he's friends with Ethan, which fine, whatever. But I almost wonder if this is a move towards bringing him in to the fold and maybe thinking that with that $1 million campaign, like, hey, this guy might people hate him, but he can also make money. So it's, I don't know. I just hope that at the end of the day, it looks like Mark Russell's done with Red Sony 24. He said, I don't think that Gail Swan's doing something currently with them, but the other creators, if they want to get out, hopefully they can get out. And hopefully those characters find new homes and somewhere where I could feel happy supporting them because it's going to be tough buying a James Bond book from Dynamite right now, as much as I love that character.
Mm-hmm. All right, then we'll jump into the other Twitter drama here. This is, like, no, you're wrong.
I want to give my numbers first because I actually just looked at Dota 6.
So
Order of the Sticks is 4,952 backers at 1,254,120. Cyberfrog is 1,048,687 backers. So there is a huge difference between doing in, not backers, money. Backers is 9,136 versus 14,952.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a pretty big.
There's a pretty big jump for someone who's claiming that he is the biggest crowdfunding comic of all time, because that is literally what it says on the Kickstarter. On the
Well, I've seen where people who are self-proclaimed comic skaters are more willing to spend a little bit more money for those books because they have their feelings. So
sure, I mean, it works. It's a good marketing technique. If you can't get back into Marvel and DC, like, all bow to you.
Yeah.
Spout some hate, get some books. If that's what you got to do to make a living, no issues. But let's talk about the latest hate. You're sorry.
Yeah, I know. Now we got more hate. Tom King, he expressed his displeasure of my favorite comic artist, Jai Lee. This is very
hard sarcasm on favorite artist people.
Yeah. He did a variant cover for his upcoming Rorschach series. We know Tom King has a Rorschach series coming out. He accused Lee of supporting Comicsgate because Lee had done a cover for Cyberfrog, which we just talked about, by the Comicsgate personality leader EBS. Later, it was made clear that Jai Lee's lack of internet presence showed that he has no personal affiliation with the group and gets his jobs via phone or his AOL. Yes, AOL email. That's that still exists. King then went to Twitter to say that he talked with Lee and everything's all good, which Jai Lee came out later and said everything is not, in fact, all good. Oh, man.
I wanted to bring this up because it states something that I personally have said a lot, where when we get into this affiliation is makes you guilty idea, that this is what happens. Now, Jai Lee is a Korean-American creator, and I don't know if he's from – I think he's from Korea, actually. I might have misspoke there. But he's a Korean creator. Obviously, he is not someone who hates minorities.
Right.
And it's said that he gets a lot of his gigs via phone. So people call him, say, hey, I'll pay you X to do a cover. Right. He says, okay, does it, and he draws it. So
yeah.
He literally says that he has no clue about this whole Comicsgate thing and didn't realize that CyberFrog was such a divisive thing. He just was given money to do a cover. So I say that because it's according to the rules of procedure here, Tom King took to Twitter saying, well, he's affiliated with them. Fuck him. And he didn't do his due diligence to say, hey, Jai, what the hell's up with this CyberFrog cover? And I just think that we need to do a little bit more of that, both as people and as the professionals that we look up to. I don't like how this all went down. And then Lee's statement, I encourage anyone to read it because it's heartbreaking. He, I guess when this all happened, he was back home after losing a family pet. And him and his wife were prepared to have like a day of mourning. And then this shitstorm hit him. And so it's just, to me, it's a cautionary tale of like, don't just jump out there and make an accusation. Like, do your due diligence. Find out personally what's going on before you make an accusation. And I think the Tom King messed up here, personally.
Yeah.
I mean, he absolutely did. I mean, what does it matter if someone wants to buy a Jai Lee color, even if he was Comicsgate? Like, so what? If that sells comics, like, and sells your comic to be Xerath, like, yeah. What's the deal? Don't worry about it. So what if he did a cover of CyberFrog? You could have liked CyberFrog. It's okay to like something, even though you don't like the creator. I feel that way about Alan Moore a lot of times.
Harry Potter. Right. J.K. Rowling's a psycho.
Right, yeah. How to turn on your fans all of a sudden, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. These things are crazy. But yeah, Tom King shouldn't have... he's in a position of power right now, and he definitely shouldn't have just called that crap out for no particular reason.
Yeah, and I'm seeing this a lot across internet culture right now, and it's really bothering me because you say Harry Potter, this and that. I always say Orson Scott Card. Like, I'm a big Ender's Game fan, and I like Orson Scott Card's work. The dude's a crazy Mormon who is a homophobe. Like, that doesn't mean because I like Ender's Game that I'm a crazy Mormon that it's a homophobe. Like, that's not how this works. It just means that I like his work. And there's certain things personally. We take my friend Joe when the whole thing with, was it Warren Ellis or?
Warren Ellis.
When Warren Ellis got, you know, his whole debacle with Me Too, and he said, like, he could no longer really support him in the near term because this wasn't just some guy fucked up. It's a guy who knew better and preached about this stuff. So Everything has to be taken individually. We can't have a giant, like, this is what we got to do when this happens. But my big thing is I don't think that we should be running out and saying nobody should support him because of X, Y, and Z, unless it's something along the lines of EVS, where it's, you know, they're just sucking dick to get comic jobs. Like, that's a different story. But yeah, I'm just disappointed in Tom King. I really am.
When it comes down to it, you just do it a variant cover, you know, And like Travis said, if he sells more variant covers because there's Jai Lee fans for liking a certain thing, like, whatever. It's not like he's the main artist and he has to have these conversations all the time. It's not like he's working with this guy all the time. You know, it's like, why?
Well, and the majority of the comic books fans go into a comic book store and buy a comic book. They don't know anything about Kickstarter. They don't know anything about Comicsgate or not Comicsgate.
Yeah, right.
All they do is they buy a book because it has Batman, Superman, period. Like, and then an occasional Image book, you know, and call it a day. You know, it's we're attacking and getting people involved in politics that are far more crazy than they need to be. Like, and they're both sides are wrong on some occasions. You know, I don't know if you saw or even talked about like the time that Ethan Van Sciver like got Donnie Cates on the phone and just harassed him for an hour, like, and put him on live. Did you guys see that?
I did not see that. But
It's fantastic. You got to look this up. So Ethan Van Sciver said something about Donnie Cates. Donnie Cates called Ethan, got his number to address it. Ethan Van Sciver put him on the air live and then tried to embarrass him and make him like acknowledge Comicsgate. Like, it was ridiculous. Like stop playing these games. Like, we're supposed to be in an industry that is supposed to – Comicsgate claims that they are not a hate group and they're trying to make the industry better. Then why don't you do that, right? Because right now, everybody's hating on Tom King and calling him the beast crap instead of going, hey, hopefully this makes you look at you know, us differently or something like that. But no, and Ethan Van Sciver is not the leader, right? He doesn't – He says all the leader things, but he refuses to take any accountability for any of the actions of his people.
Right.
I always viewed him as kind of the pseudo leader just because he kind of like is the, I know there was things that happened before him, but like the impetus of Comicsgate is right around him and those comments. So, but I agree. Like, we always say whenever it comes to anything, like, listen, you don't like the new Star Wars, don't go out and tell everybody that's involved with that Star Wars they should go kill themselves. Like, don't be that person. Be better. And it doesn't matter if it's this or that or whatever. Like, unless we're talking about something really serious, just don't do that. We're talking about comic books. Right. Like, we're talking about fucking Rorschach, a book that, you know, it happened. And Jai Lee's very connected with Watchmen over the years. So, of course, he's going to do a variant cover. And whether he is or isn't involved with Comicsgate, which is so obvious that he's not, like, Tom King, you have enough time to do your research. And also, Ethan Van Sciver, for what he did and that, and what you're saying, Travis, like, don't do that shit either. Like, if you want to make the industry better and that is what you're claiming, then you need to be better. And that goes for everybody. And I'm getting really sick of the online shit of, like, yeah, let's just go shit at somebody and tell them to go kill themselves and ruin their day or their week or their month. And let's cancel them or do this. Like, everybody just calm down. Right. It's just getting under my skin with all this.
Well, me personally, I just hate that we even, like, we have these things to talk about because, like, it seems like some stupid crap like this happens every week, you know? It's like...
Yeah, I want to be excited about Injustice possibly coming back. Yeah, I want to be excited about... Norse mythology coming. I want to talk about the new Action Comics. Like, I don't want to talk about people being shitheads online.
And I want to point out to all these people, for everybody who's a Kickstarter guy, all these independent comics, the only reason why you guys are getting so much screen time and leverage is because Marvel and DC had to shut down and they're doing things that were solicited last February. Like, that's where they're up to now. So this is not the new norm. Like, DC and Marvel are going to have very new, very exciting things very soon that they don't want to talk about yet because they don't want to lose the money that they already have invested in things. Right. And then things are going to go back to normal and everyone's going to hide in their little caves and us indie guys are going to lose all the ground we could have made because we're fighting amongst each other by just giving 1 minute, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not that Marvel's any better with their Wednesday variants, but, you know, that's here later. Yeah,
right. It's what I say. I become a big fan of, on Facebook, the snooze button, or on Twitter, the mute button. Like, don't give people the benefit. Just either snooze them or mute them or just get them out of your life without letting them know. Because as soon as you ban somebody or block somebody, they won. But if they can just shout into the ether about you and you don't have to read it anymore, you got rid of negativity and you can focus on the positive. Because I don't know about you two, and I don't know about all the fans out there, but there's enough positive happening in my life right now that I want to put that out there. And I just wish that more people felt that way.
Yeah, I don't know. And I wish people would post things that, like, they actually looked up their facts first. You know, it's I like reading articles where they speculate if Batfleck is going to come back to HBO for like a miniseries. That's the shit that I want to be speculating. Yeah. I don't want to be reading. I don't want to be digging through tweets of like people arguing with each other. It's like, come on, we got enough shit going on in everyday life. But yeah. Speaking of that, we might as well just talk about the comics we read this week because,
yay! Yeah,
which yay! I read a whole two comics. I was very bad about it this week, guys. But I think for me, it was probably the two most important. I had Batman 95 and Shazam 13. I'm wondering if Travis read. Are you reading Shazam?
The one that Jeff Johns wrote?
Yeah.
Back in the day?
Yeah. No, the one currently.
Currently? No.
Okay. I'm not reading Shazam. I wanted to. I just dropped the ball at Shazam. I'm reading Batman, of course. But.
Yeah. So I'll just talk Shazam 13. Chris, did you read it?
I did.
So back in issue 12, we had that like filler issue that Jeff Johns didn't write. If you could guess, Travis, Jeff Johns has fallen behind with the story, and
that's crazy.
Yeah, somehow Superboy Prime is in the dark world, and we don't know what he's doing there. And I don't think Jeff Johns knows what he's doing there because he hasn't really addressed it in the four or five issues that we've seen.
Probably ties into Legion of Superheroes somewhere. It's probably Bendis's fault.
It's all Bendis's fault. But he's kind of like we've seen Superboy Prime. We see him again in this issue. And we've seen him at least three or four times. Like, the big reveal, I thought, you know, something would have came of it, but nothing's really explained what he's doing there. But this issue is, you know, the big battle between, we find out that Billy Batson's dad was the one with Mr. Mind in his ear the whole time, which was a cool reveal. We thought it was Dr. It's always, you always think it's Dr. Savannah, right? Oh, it's going to be him. He's going to have Mr. Mind controlling him. When in fact, it's Billy's dad, and the big reveal here is like Billy's dad really didn't give a shit about Billy the whole time. Like, it was just, you know, he was being controlled. And when they found Billy's dad, it's really sad. They're like, he's still being a criminal and doesn't really care where his son is. But with that, we see all the different magic lands or like the game lands, the bad lands, the Oz lands. We see all those come forward in this like epic. There's a lot of good spreads. There's a spread of all the evil people, like the villains from each world. And then there's a spread of like, okay, all the world's being affected by what's happening. Basically, by the end of the issue, they open the door and they do this big, ritual to open all the doors to all the lands and become one Earth. So I guess there's no difference between magic lands and Earth. It's all just open and all the creatures are able to walk freely and stuff like that. So it looks like it's going to bring a lot of chaos. There's a lot of people that have been trapped in the magic lands that are a little pissed off. And then we get the reveal that, at the end of the issue, Billy shrinks down to Mr. Mind size, goes in his father's ear, and is there to fight Mr. Mind. So that was a pretty cool scene. That's to be continued, but other than that, it was pretty cool.
I think. Yeah, and Dale Evesham's art in this book is fantastic. Evesham's
art
is
so good.
Like, he does such a great job, and like Mike said, with the two-page spreads, the one-page spreads, like he knocks it out of the park in each one. There's the one right in the top of the book that shows all the monsters that came from the different lands.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, kudos to him. He's doing a great job in this book.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun when it does come out. so I guess I don't know. This was supposed to be like, I thought it was supposed to be like 12 issues. We're on issue 13 now, and it doesn't seem like it's slowing down. They don't talk about Superboy Prime. They show him again in the issue, but it's kind of like Jeff Johns just putting him there like, hey, he's still here. Not going to use him yet, but he's still there. And it's like, okay, well, what's he really doing here?
They're probably trying to figure out how to use him now that 5G's dead.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. We don't know. And the other
book, I don't think they're doing that next crisis.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows at this point? I mean, Batman 95 I read, but Travis, do you want to give us the lowdown on what you thought about that one?
Yeah. I'm really loving this Joker War so far. You know, I love Punchline. I've loved every appearance of her so far.
Yeah.
You know, this issue, is the aftermath of Joker being a millionaire. You know, I was hoping for a little bit more excitement for to see what Joker's going to do with all that money, but not so much.
I mean, yeah, I think it's kind of, he's pulling the asshole move where he's trying to buy up all the theaters and play the Mask of Zorro. Pretty messed up.
It is pretty messed up. And he finally got it from that one guy. He's like, oh, Bruce Wayne's been trying to buy it. So let me get this straight. Bruce Wayne couldn't do it, but Joker walks in and you're just like, yeah, that seems like a good deal. I've never seen about him on the news. All his business transactions seem to work out right.
Yeah, he wears this fancy purple suit.
He came in with one of those dynamites with his face on it. So they're just like, oh, I guess we got to now.
Yeah, we got to buy it. In the end of the issue, they reveal that we think Alfred is still alive, maybe?
I think that's just like in his head because of the gas.
Yeah, you think so?
That's what I got.
Yeah. You never know.
I'm not reading this, and as I read more into it, as I like scour the news and everything, I realize that this is the story I've always wanted out of Batman, which is a Batman without a support system, and now he's actually losing his money, too. So... Oh, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to jump in now, but I'm definitely going to jump into the trades when it comes out, because it just sounds like this is exactly the kind of Batman story I've been looking for.
And I think James Tynion's been writing Batman for a while now. He's come a long way. When he was doing Batman Eternal, I mean, that was Batman with his entire support system. I mean, they were pulling Batman out of everywhere. You know, now we're getting the Joker War, which... Like you said, it's Batman.
Wasn't that Death in the Family?
True.
That's what Death in the Family was all about, was getting rid of the thing to get him back to his core, so he was going to take out the rest of the core. It's the same thing being played out. So I think, and I think we're doing that on purpose. I think it's, I think that's just where we're at with Batman. Like, with his support group, we know he can't lose, so I think that's just part of a deal. But I don't think that's the core of the storyline. I think there's something deeper that's going to happen.
Yeah, but I also even in like the what I've read of Death in the Family, Death of the Family, all these stories, Alfred's still there. Alfred's still, or Oracle is there. Somebody is there to kind of be in his ear and help him along. And it seems like from what I'm reading from the outside looking in, that's even gone now. And then what happens when you take away his money and there's no more big toys? Like, how does Batman go about the world without those things? And I kind of want that. I know that's kind of an older Batman that used to be, because I read a thing about the history of Batman recently where there was a time where he wasn't a multi-billionaire. And I understand billionaires are a today thing. But even years and years ago where he didn't have all these fancy toys, he was a crime fighter who was very wealthy, but not up here 1% wealthy. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to get back to that and see where a modern... take can do with that.
Yeah,
I mean, I think they're doing some great stuff. The lead up was fantastic, you know, the assassins coming after him, and the chess piece death guy, you know, that guy was pretty cool. I hope that the designer, I hope that becomes a character.
Right, me too.
I really hate it when they do that, to be honest. Like, I really hated that Hush became a character, but I don't care.
I was really excited for the designer to be a character, and then when they did the Joker reveal, I was just kind of like, eh. I'm like, this has been done before. Like, I don't want every villain to just be Joker at the end of the story arc. You know what I mean? It's like, I thought the designer, the idea of him was pretty cool. I mean, I understand why they went that route and did the things they did, but it would be nice if he came back and had a little more...
Well, this feels like such a... You could tell when AT&T took over, right? It was like, all right, so Batman is Joker all the time.
Yep.
What do you mean? Like, every black label needs to be about the Joker. We don't have a Joker story. All right, I'll give you Harley Quinn, but that's it. That's as far as I'm going.
Yeah.
Oh, and your Harley Quinn story has to include the Joker. Fuck!
So, come on.
Well, it's what I said when King was doing the book. So I'm also reading King in trade, so I'm behind on that. But I just read the wedding issues, and it's like the way he brought in Joker for those two issues, was perfect. Yeah. Like, that's exactly the relationship that Batman and Joker have in my head. And that's because I know Tom King's a huge Batman animated series fan, and I am too. But also, like, he went that entire run without doing a giant, like, earth-shattering Joker story, and I don't think he had one, or at least he didn't want to do one, and I think that's part of the reason he was kicked off this book, is because they wanted issue 100 to be Batman and Joker punching each other.
Right.
That makes sense. No, that was it. That's all I had this week. So I don't know if you want to go down your list, Chris or Travis.
Yeah, I'll go to mine, and then we'll let Travis end up with everything. So if you're reading any of these, Travis, just let me know and jump in. But
I've got all of them. We both read Marvel, so.
Well, I'm going to start with some DC. We got Action Comics number 1023. This is chapter 2 of the House of Kent story, which is trying to bring Connor into the whole mythos of Batman again. And we really get into Red Cloud and Clark and Lois learning about the Invisible Mafia and how that affects everything around them, because the Invisible Mafia not only is trying to kill Superman, but they own the Daily Planet right now. And we get a good reveal at the end of, like, they find out that that happened, and now what happens because of that? The FBI comes knocking on the door. And there's some good stuff in there with the three Supermen or Superboys and all that. So I'm really enjoying Bendis's Superman right now, and I think the action is actually a little bit better than Superman for me right now.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the Connor Kent story. You know, that and the Young Justice, between the two, I think they're doing a great job of putting the two together.
I've got Empire X-Men number 1. This was...
Well, do you guys stick with DC? Because I've got one more DC book.
Go ahead, because that's all my DC.
I read the two spinoffs, the Detective and Batgirl for the Joker War stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So Detective was really good. I highly recommend it. It's only two issues, so this one and the one before. If you're a big Court of Owls fan, like, they really play up on that stuff. They really, really allow the Court of Owls to come back in. Joker uses them and manipulates them. He basically unlocks another Talon, has it go against Batman. So that's a lot of fun to read. It's also got a good Two-Face story in there.
Oh, cool.
The Batgirl was a little bit lesser, you know. It's really just a distraction story. The Nightwing one the week before was a lot better. If you guys talked about that, the Nightwing in Joker crossover. That book is horrible, by the way. And Dan Jurgens doesn't know how to write the Joker.
Yeah.
But he's trying to fix things, and I applaud him. And I just love watching him try to fix things.
He's trying to keep everything afloat.
He's just like, no, please, like, Nightwing still. Like, it was like 17 people are manipulating him, and he has four brains, like, messing with him.
Yeah.
Like, please do. Oh, and now Joker has him. Like, that's cool, right, guys? Come on. Give up on Nightwing. They'll kill him. You know they'll kill him.
They'll kill him off. Please. Please read it.
Oh, but Batgirl, like, it really just it kind of the start of what they're doing with that. That I definitely recommend the Detective versus the Batgirl, just because I'm a huge Talons fan. Like, Talons, Court of Owls is one of the better stories that's come out in this current New 52. Like, changing the Batman mythos with the Court of Owls has been amazing. And every time I see them, if they're used correctly, they really heighten the story. And Joker knowing all about the Talons, using them as tools was just perfect.
That's cool. Yeah, I didn't know that a crossover was happening with Detective. I'll have to check it out.
There you go. Sorry.
I actually forgot. I read some digital books too that are DC related. So I had DC's Hope at World's End. I read chapters 4 and 5. I know Mikey talked about 5 last week because it came out last week, but I'm still really liking that book. And chapter 5 particularly was kind of like goofy because it's like Damian being Batman and John being Superman, and them and then who's the Wonder Woman of the group? I'm zoning on it, but anyways, it was fun because it was like kids playing the Trinity and them going back to Gotham. So I really enjoyed that. I read Strange Adventure number 3 because I missed out on it last week, and I really enjoyed that. Like, we talked about it extensively.
Yep.
But then another one of the DC digital dailies that's no longer daily, From Beyond the Unknown number 1. And to my knowledge, they haven't done another issue of this, so I think this is just like a one shot thing. But this was a Green Lantern story, and it was something that I'm sure has been touched upon before, but for my eyes is new because I'm not much of a DC fan. But it was the whole story is the idea of Hal Jordan being the protector of Sector 2814, and he always spends his time on Earth and nowhere else. So there's a a planet that gets obliterated in his sector, and they blame him for it because he's supposed to be the protector of that sector, but he spends all of his time protecting Earth.
Yeah.
And then they come back for kind of revenge. So anybody that's a Green Lantern fan, it's like 10 to 12 pages, and it's a really good like short story. I really liked it, and I would recommend it. And it's by a creative team I've never really heard of before, so I look forward to see what they're doing after that. Cool. Jumping back to Marvel, Empire X-Men number one. So this was this was Hickman doing a weird zombie story where plants fight zombies, not like a video game. So Wanda goes back to Genosha and tries to resurrect all the people she killed in House of M, and ends up resurrecting them as like mutant zombies.
Oh.
And then the aliens that are coming down from the Empire storyline find Genosha, and they start to fight these zombies. So it's a weird, like, wacky story. There's some cool moments in it with Angel and how the X Corporation fits in with the overall X-Men story, and what Xavier's doing, and how Krakoa goes into all this, because Krakoa is a nation built on plant life, and we've got this alien invader that's built on plant life. So I really enjoyed this as a part of what's going on with Empire. And if you're reading X-Men, it's written by Hickman. I think it's going to fit into his story arc really well. And it brings back characters from an early story as well. So I recommend that one.
Well, and that's one of the coolest things about Empire versus any other crossover at Marvel and DC. They put all their best writers on stuff.
Yes.
They didn't. It's not what they normally do when they're like, all right, this third tier writer gets to write the spinoff. It's like,
right,
the main guys are going to write our spinoffs. Let's hit it hard, which was super weird. I love seeing M in that. Like every time there's a Gen X character, I'm going to buy it. So that's a big deal for me. But it was really weird, especially Wanda being in it. Like you're like, all right. So because Wanda was in both this one and the Avengers one that came out this week. But is she a mutant? If she's not, they don't really address it.
Hmm. Yeah.
That is interesting. Yeah, because they usually... I know when I was trying to read Avengers, they always strayed away from that stuff. Like, because they didn't want to get into the whole mix up with Fox and them and how those characters...
resolved. Where they at?
Right.
Yeah, and the time when you were getting into it, too, they were trying to push in humans as the new mutants.
Yeah. It was just a weird time. I was reading Marvel and, like, this is getting... I don't... Who are the humans? And...
We'll apologize for Marvel for that.
What a time for me to jump in. I was like, this is
a dark time before the Empire.
Yeah. Nice.
So, yeah, we got Empire number two well. And this was kind of just a whole story about the backlash of issue one. So we talked about what happened in issue one last week. And this was them kind of coming to grips with what they had done and then trying to fix it. And then in the end, we get the big kind of moment, which is Captain Marvel getting Ronan's old hammer and becoming the new
Executioner.
Thank you. There's some great moments in here, but I mean, that's kind of the crux of the story right there. I'm enjoying Empire so far, two issues in. It's fun. It's not like the best event book ever, but...
It would have been way better about 5 or 10 years ago when these characters were relevant. That's the biggest problem with it. You know, Swordman and the Child, like those are old stories, you know?
Yeah. Bringing Swordman was cool for me, being a long time.
I love Swordman.
Yeah, but there's some where I was like, they're bringing him back? What?
Yeah. I do like the plant thing. I wonder if this is going to tie back to Contagion without us knowing.
I forgot about Contagion, because Contagion was a really throwaway story.
Yeah, it was a 5-issue planned invasion. But it fits in continuity from what I've read, so it's really interesting.
Yeah, and the Fantastic Four are right at the center of that, too. So that's interesting, yeah. I'll be thinking about that moving forward. And then I got X-Men Fantastic Four number four. Well,
did you get the Avengers crossover? Or you
didn't? I didn't, no.
Okay, so let me talk about that one, since we're on Empire. Hey,
do it.
So the Avengers one was super interesting because they talked about, they're trying to put a team together. And they grabbed some really cool people. They grabbed Wonder Man, which I haven't used very often.
Oh, wow.
Wonder Man fan. They grabbed Wonder Man.
That's a crazy.
And they kept it. I was super mad at the book. Like, I read it first. I read it really fast, and I was like, God, I'm so mad. But I had my child in the room. But Wonder Man's still pacifist, because Wonder Man recently became a pacifist. I don't know if you know that. So he doesn't fight. But it looks like he fights throughout the issue. He's just hitting them passively, apparently.
I don't mean this when I punch you. I really don't mean it. It's just going to happen. Sorry.
It uses Quicksilver, so I love Quicksilver. He's back in the normal costume, not that crazy costume from his last miniseries. You're welcome for whoever decided that. That was a good call. But they're attacking. Trying to remember exactly what they did in the issue. They're basically getting little small squads to like hit the heavy zones that are hit on this. So they're getting small Avengers teams to hit this, hit on all the squads. It was really interesting. And at the end of it, they go to Savage Land because they have Kazar, and they find that the Savage Land is completely taken over. And Shayna is taken over by these plant people and is now a plant person.
Oh. Now I need to pick this book up because you said Wonder Man, Savage Land, and I'm happy.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's both those things happened.
There's a ridiculous line, too, which I was really shocked that it was so poorly written, but they're like, oh my God, a dinosaur is dead. Something seriously bad must be happening here. Dinosaur's dead. I was like, come on. Come on, Gypsy's ass.
Oh, no.
Don't steal that for your book. You know, I know you're not finished production. I mean, it's a good line, and I saw dinosaurs in the preview, so don't steal it just because you read it and you think it's awesome.
Chris wrote it down and was like, yep.
I'm busy stealing from Robert Kirkman right now.
See it like your dinosaur super?
yeah, exactly. Yep.
So yeah, X-Men Fantastic Four number 4. This was the conclusion of everything that's been going on with the series, being the last issue, and we get giant Doom Sentinels fighting mutants. We get Doom trying to quote unquote fix Franklin and his powers, and it all kind of falls apart when Franklin realizes that something's not right and folds it all in and says, no, I'm going to help these people and I'm not going to continue with this process that you're putting me through. And I actually, that whole part was okay. I really love how this ended, though, because it ended with Franklin and the Fantastic Four kind of having this family moment of, like, you know, the kid growing up and no longer being the little baby anymore. And Franklin going to Krakoa to learn more about why his powers are draining. And through Krakoa and the power of that nation, the power of being a mutant and not as much how Doom does things.
I want to add to that. Franklin's powers dwindling was never really important until like this return since COVID. Like, it is a big deal. Like, everybody's talking about it. So it's going to affect something coming up.
Yeah. And now he's a part of Krakoa too. So he has his own portal that can go back home and he can see his family. And then there's also like a really dark moment here where Professor X and Magneto go and see Reed. And earlier in the series, Reed had created this machine that can turn off somebody's X gene or erase it from them. Mm. And they destroy it. And not only do they destroy it, but they go into his mind and erase his ability to recreate it. Mm. And Professor X even says, like, I could, and I normally would, just say, forget this ever happened, and then we can move on. But I want you to know that you fucked up and that you did something terrible. And I don't want you to forget it, but I also don't want you to be able to do it again. And it was like a really dark moment for Professor X. But really great series. Zdarsky's writing it. So anything that Zdarsky does right now, I've been all for. But I thought it was a really great four-issue series.
Well, and the one thing I want to point out is, so if you've been reading X-Men, those pages that they've been doing, like the detail pages, it showed it disappearing in Professor X's mind, which is fantastic.
Yes.
Also, like, earlier in that issue, they talked about the portals and where they are.
Yes.
And where they are, and basically looking at Mr. Fantastic going, all right, if I have to go to war with these guys, here's where they are. Like, it was really interesting watching these two groups in this silent war that they're going through. It was really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, there's also a moment in there too where they, because they're saving these mutants from Latveria, and they end up saying, like, Doom, we're taking these people. There are people. And Doom has this moment, like, where he says to them, good, I'm, you know, take them, but I hope that their Latveria blood seeps into Krakoa and starts to take control. And it's like, there's going to be something with Doom coming up with in X-Men 2. I could tell. But yeah, good series. X-Men's been fantastic recently. And that's saying a lot because I'm not an X-Men guy.
Yeah, he's not.
That four issue was really, really good. Like, the Franklin and Doom part was actually the least interesting, like, yeah, which is the main part of it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I got the free comic book day or free comic book summer issue of Spider-Man here. And this has two stories in it. One is Spider-Man and Black Cat. And it's kind of setting up a kind of crossover story arc. I was about that story, although I did laugh at the end, because what happens is Vulture finds a way to get these fear grenades that are left over from the Hydra, when Hydra took over the United States, and Black Cat, like, sets him off, and he goes nuts, and he's, like, repeating these things that Spider-Man has said to him. So that was kind of funny, but the second part was a Venom story, and it was Donny Cates Stegman doing it, and it's really a lead up to what we talked about. I can't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago with issue 26 and this new character Virus. And not only setting up this, you know, King in Black story arc, but also laying the groundwork for this is what's going to happen in the next story arc with this new character Virus. So if you're reading Venom or Spider-Man, this is, I mean, it's free and it's a really good read and pretty crucial to the overall story.
It's really good.
Yeah. Cool. That's all my Marvel. Do you have anything else?
Let me see what I got. So I got the Sins Rising prelude. I wasn't a big fan of it. That was a Spider-Man preview. It was very, very dark and basically a retelling, you know, who Sin Eater is, because he's going to be the next big villain in Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. You need it if you don't know the history really well. So if you're not a big history buff for Spider-Man, definitely pick it up. But if you know that history, it's really a throwaway. Which I hate to say. However, Daredevil is really shocking that none of you guys read Daredevil, because that book is fantastic.
It's on my list. I didn't get around to reading it this week. It is amazing.
It is the first thing I read every time I see it. So Daredevil was so good this week. Ties in with the end of the big fallout between all the assassins coming in into New York and Daredevil putting himself on trial. So it's, you know, it basically goes, leads you into what happens. You know, Matt Murdock turns himself in, you know, he turns himself in. But there's a neat twist to it about how he's going to be able to keep being Daredevil, like, and be held accountable as Daredevil and not as Matt Murdock, not unmasked. Mm. So it's really cool. There was a really cool moment with Spider-Man coming after Daredevil going, I told you not to put this effing mask on. And Matt Murdock, like stepping up, he's like, no, man. He's like, we all make mistakes. How many times has your webbing accidentally hurt somebody or injured somebody? How many people have you put in the hospital? Don't try to hold me accountable. If you want to throw down, let's throw down. And Spider-Man kind of wimps out, I guess. but it seems like there's a round three. It seems like the Spider-Man versus Daredevil is going to be a thing, and it's going to be epic. That's so awesome. That was really cool. So that's all I read for Marvel. I still have Wolverine to read and like Hellions and New Mutants. I haven't got to any of that yet.
Yeah, I have a few I had to read still too. Last is my independent stuff.
Okay, let's go.
So let me see. First, I read Billionaire Island number 3 that came out. And that book's fantastic. It's, so they like escape that hamster cage that they're stuck in, and it's a literal giant hamster cage for people that aren't reading. And they leave the island and realize there's this whole section of Billionaire Island that isn't developed, and it's just desert. So they're trying to trek across this and figure out what's going on, and they end up finding the edge of the island, and then they find this little cave, and they find this guy inside a cave who was going nuts because he's been there for years by himself. And we got the main character, the reporter there. She's one of them. And then the guy that she found in the hamster cage. And they get there and they're talking to this guy, and the guy she found in the hamster cage is kind of sitting there going, I don't want to become this. This is fucked up. I'm going to go back to the hamster cage. And he runs off and goes back to that. And it's you know, obviously a Mark Russell thing. It's a social look at society and all that. But then we got the A story, which is the guy who killed the billionaire and went to the island to seek revenge, and him getting tortured. And we find out that everything that's happening on Wall Street and all the decisions made by these billionaires is all controlled by a man who passed away, left everything to his dog, and his dog makes the decisions. And how the dog makes the decisions is they put out bowls of food for him, and whatever one he eats out of is what they do.
That's awesome.
So the entire world economy hinges on this dog. It's amazing. A wacky story. I'm really loving Billionaire Island. I highly recommend people read it. I mean, I've praised Mark Russell up and down in the show.
Yep.
And I thought this was a really great issue. Like, that reveal of the dog was fantastic.
That is really cool.
I need to read more Ahoy comics anyways.
Oh, yeah.
Ahoy does great stuff.
Yeah.
The Man Who Fucked Up Time. So this has turned into a whodunit story because the future character here meets with the present one, and they take him to the beginning of time, and he tries to kill him, and shit goes nuts, and I don't know what the fuck's going on with the story, but he ends up finding out that he's being played by the time police here and goes to seek revenge because he realizes that he's the one traveling through time trying to save everything. He, you know, there's certain scars that he has and distinguishing marks that his other duplicates do not have. And so he started to realize they can't be future versions of me if they don't have these distinguishing marks. It's a crazy time travel story. John Layman's doing a great job. And Carl Moster is doing the art, and the art is awesome. Very detailed, very not really cartoony, but just very colorful. And I can't talk enough about this book, how much I love it. People should definitely be picking it up.
Awesome.
I like it.
Then the last book was... It was... Yeah, but The Resistance number 3, the Straczynski book that I know won't finish.
yeah.
This hit me because I had... you know, everybody has their ideas, but... This kind of, the idea of what happens here is something I was thinking about doing, and now I just feel like I can't do it. But it's these people with powers go to these agents, and they set them up with identities and costumes and send them out into the world to be heroes. And we have our main character here that's going through this process and then realizes, like, this isn't what I wanted. I wanted to just help people with my powers that I gained. And then ends up talking to different people in charge of this company and finding out that the only way he can do what he wants to do is through this company. But ends up telling the guy running the company, like, wait a minute, you've been playing me this whole time. Like, you're full of shit. You're taking advantage of these people, and I'm going to take you down first, and runs away. And we get our first kind of superhero in costume in this book.
So first, let's address a couple of things. So you will get it finished because AWA has a requirement that it has to be finished before it's solicited. So you're welcome.
Oh, all right. Well, that's
you're good. Welcome. You're welcome. Thanks secondly, I don't understand that book at all. Like AWA, the Resistance is supposed to be making them all connected in a universe, but none of the other books are superhero books. So I'm very confused. Nobody in the other books have powers, as far as I can tell, except for the Angel one. Right. I read all the AWA books except for Archangel 8. That book was horrible. Like, it's why would you grab the Punisher, the worst storyline of the Punisher, when he becomes an angel of God, and then redo that in another book? Like, it's just not smart.
Yeah. I don't think it's
the
best route. You like Archangel, don't you?
I haven't read Archangel yet. I like Moresi, who wrote Archangel, but... Yeah. I tried that initial book they did, and I really couldn't do it because this is a tough conversation because it's really a Mark Wade run book where it is very, very politically centered.
Right.
And I'm not I'm not the guy who's like, don't do politics in comics, but it just, it rubbed me the wrong way because I'm just like, it's really preachy. I forget what that event was called, but I read like two issues into it and I just didn't really get it. And then I wanted to try this one because Straczynski and I, who was doing the art? It was somebody I really like. Diodato Jr. is doing the art. Mm-hmm. I love Diodato. And I'm going to finish it, but I'm with you. Like, we had a book that was based, like, issue one was COVID-19, except people got superpowers. I don't even remember what happened in issue two. And now we got this that's like a superhero agency.
Right.
So I think, I don't know what AWA is doing. I would like to see their how their sales are doing, because I can't see them lasting much longer with these superhero books.
Yeah, I mean, I like Hotel. I like Hotel. I like Red Border. Devil's Highway was one of the by Benjamin Percy was one of the best whodunit supernatural horror movie first issues I've ever read. Like, I reached out to him. It was so good. It was really, really, really good, because it's always the same standard stuff. Hey, you cafe, murder happens at a cafe. This guy walked into it, gets part of the situation, but he did it in such a unique way. It was really good. I said Red Border, right? Red Border is really good. What's the other one? The Zero, Year Zero is okay. But I don't really, Zombie Stories, Alexis done by Kirkman, I found I don't really care about. So that's their own fault, you know. I like Marvel Zombies, also started by Kirkman, so I guess that's not valid. Deceased, I like that.
Deceased, yeah, that was pretty good. Okay. And what about Blackest Night? I mean, Blackest Night is technically zombies, I guess, right?
I suppose, but I feel like Blackest Night, like, I wanted to know what the Blackest Night was ever since I knew that that could be a thing.
Right? Yeah,
The minute Jeff Johns put that idea in my head, I was just
like, okay, I need to know.
You couldn't have let me down because I was so excited to see it. So it could have been anything. Old Haunts, you know, especially if you like My Crime stuff, you'll really like Old Haunts. It's like a cross between a crime comic and The Crow.
Oh, okay.
So it's really, really cool. So I think they're making some good books, but JMS, which is supposed to be the flagship title, is not doing that.
Yeah.
I think because they're trying to build a new superhero universe. They launched that as a statement when they first like kind of jumped forward in the scene, because I know they've been around for a bit, and hired Mark Waid on. And I just think that initiative is going to flounder pretty soon. Right. Like, I don't see it lasting very long.
And JMS by himself is better at it. Rising Stars could have been a superhero universe. Just take that and develop that further.
Yeah. I loved
Rising. There's so many kids that weren't announced. Like, really.
Yeah.
But seriously, Rising Stars, like, remember, like, there was a whole bunch of kids that were missing. Like, he left all these plot holes to make that. If you really want one, buy Rising Stars from JMS. Don't have them create some bullshit.
Yeah. Rising Stars is so good. I really enjoyed that series.
So that was everything I had to read. Mike, so where can people find?
Hold on, you're not reading two good things, and I'm very confused. Why aren't you reading Once in Future? Why aren't you reading Die? Once in Future.
Once in Future.
Yeah, I'm not reading any of those books. I've heard of them. I have not checked them out.
I thought you were reading Once in Future.
No.
What was the other one?
Once in Future.
You're going to join the future.
And then Die.
Oh, Die.
Not Die, Die, Die. Die.
Yeah, that's a different book.
They're both by Karen Gillan. So Die is a story of five kids who played D&D when they were a kid. When they used to be D&D, they actually used to go into the game. The game was very real to them. It had a whole universe.
Yep.
They offed one of their friends in the universe and left. Their friend dragged them back into the universe when they're adults and they're having to play it out and dealing with all the repercussions and the real life responsibilities.
I read the first issue of that. I did. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, you need to read the trade. The first trade's out. The second one is just started. Like, if you ever played Dungeons & Dragons as a kid, you'll love this because it does all the Dungeons & Dragons tropes, right?
Imagine
you playing Dungeons & Dragons when you were a kid and like you went to a town and you killed everybody and you thought it was fun and your DM allowed it and all that stuff.
Yeah, right.
Now you come back years later and you have to deal with the repercussions that you were killing.
That's awesome.
or you had all these sexual affairs with all these random things.
Oh, yeah.
You got to deal with the children that you have from these
things.
Oh,
my God. So that's Chris's character. Yeah. Yep.
It's so good. It's so good. Awesome. I love Die. If you're not reading it, you definitely read it. And Once in Future, what it is there is this old grandmother is a monster hunter, but there's been no monsters for about 30 years because she killed them all.
Mm-hmm.
And Merlin is back. We just find that out in the latest issue. Merlin's back, and he's resurrecting a undead version of King Arthur. And this undead version of King Arthur is going against the world, and they're bringing back all these British. We talked about earlier being a mythos guy. They talk about all the British mythos. So Grendel's in it, Beowulf's in it. So they're resurrected undead versions of these, fighting this kid who knows nothing about the supernatural world and his sassy grandmother who keeps messing things up. It's so dope. It's so much fun. It's already been optioned for a movie. Highly recommend.
I'm going to be checking
these out. Two books that sound like they were written for me, and nobody has ever told me about them.
Yeah, I haven't checked them out either. So
we need to talk more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we got to get you on the show more often. That's for sure. I mean,
what I love about your show is you guys read comics, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's so many people who have me on shows who are just like, hey, what would you recommend I read? And I recommend a whole bunch of books. And I'm hoping they're like, I read that. And they're all like, very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, read a goddamn comic if you're going to write them. All right? That's a rule.
We dropped the news about the Once in Future being optioned. I remember that, but I've just never read it. I definitely will now that you've recommended it. Plus, Kieran Gillen is a really good writer.
Oh, it's so good. So sassy. So much fun. Every issue is funner than the last one. And just the mythos that they pull out of it is just so dope.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. And not – you think it's predictable. Like, you read the first couple of issues, like, oh, I see where this is going. Mm-hmm. And it's not going in that direction at all, which is great.
Awesome.
I love books that do that.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't go the typical trope way. Yeah.
Cool. So I think now that's all the books we've read this week.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I've read more, but I think those are all I need to talk
about. Yeah.
Mike, where can people find you online?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker, but more importantly, where can they find Travis online?
They can't. I don't believe in the internet.
Okay.
Especially since COVID, I decided to hide.
You have an AOL.
That's Travis Gibb at AOL.com.
AOL is too tracky. That's where every time I go on there, someone's messaging me in my private messenger, age, sex, location. It's too. They want to know too much.
Yeah.
So you can find me on Hotmail. I have a GeoCities website. If you'd like to go to it, it's geocities.com/travis.gibb/1484967-.
Oh my God. What a throwback.
Cool cat.
Wow.
Just like what I said earlier, if you made it this far and you're looking for it, Travis Gibb, you can find me on Facebook. Voodoo Nations is a Kickstarter. Find it there. VoodooNations.com or BrokeDownAndFourDeadBodies.com. They both exist. Go check them out. And on Instagram and Twitter, it's JesterLou, JesterLou.
Awesome.
You can find me on pretty much any social media as Fortress Chris and at my website, ChrisRunt.com. That's ChrisRunt.com. If you want to follow the show further, it's FortressComicNews.com. That's where everything we do is right there, from this show to the Bat Friends podcast to our weekly what's coming out in your comic stores this week and so on. Remember, everybody, if you're listening to us, give us a 5-star review on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use. And if you are watching us and our beautiful faces, to thumb up the video, subscribe to the channel, and comment down below. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you next week.